This show contains discussions of violence, murder, abuse, suicide, some use of language, and other things that some people may find offensive. We don't recommend Crime Cafe for children under the age of 14. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome or welcome back to this episode of Crime Cafe Podcast. I'm Amber.
I'm Coral.
And this week, we are going to be talking about the murder of Cheryl Spiegel.
Yes, and I told Amber this story earlier, but basically how I found out about this murder was I was looking in the depths of Google for little known murders, but blogs that people have written about these little known murders, because blogs, I'm telling you, is like the best source.
Yeah.
Blogs and YouTube videos. So on the 10th page of Google, I found one of the best, if not the best blog I've ever seen, best true crime blog I've ever seen. It's called Gone in the Fog. It's about the murder and investigation of Cheryl Spiegel, and a choir teacher lives in the area of where this happened. She's younger than Cheryl, but she, through like a personal journey, which she explains on the blog how she found out about it and everything, she made it her personal mission to find out what happened to Cheryl, find out all the facts that she could, and get her case out there because it's unsolved. And so we are in communication with Beth Roland, the woman who literally dedicates all her free time to this and has done such amazing things for Cheryl that we'll talk about later. And we just wanted to give her a huge thank you and shout out, because this case, we're coming up on 50 years that it's a 50 years anniversary of her death. So it should be solved. It just should. And I think Cheryl's case is really important, and I'm glad we're here to talk about it today.
Yes. So we're just going to go ahead and jump right on in to this case. So in Highland Heights, it's a small town in northern Kentucky. In 1971, the year of the disappearance of Cheryl Spiegel, the city was a typical American small town containing middle-class working families. The town itself was so small that it only had one post office.
Yeah, and one grocery store.
My cave now.
Literally. There are Highland Heights residents who lived on the same street as Cheryl, or near it even, and some attended the same school. Others knew people involved in the search parties, and these people have very vivid memories of that time when the adults were frantically searching for a missing child. And there's several accounts of like terror and panic that were inflicted on the residents of the street and neighboring street by like police and newspaper reporters.
Oh my gosh, I can imagine though.
Yeah.
So Cheryl was just a fifth grade student at Highland Heights Elementary School in 1971 when she vanished. Cheryl Ann Spiegel, which is my mom's name, except for
Cheryl.
Yeah, except her last name isn't Spiegel, obviously. Was born in Covington, Kentucky on October 19th, 1961. She had two older brothers, Mickey and Mark, and a younger half-brother, Darren. She lived on Rose Avenue in Highland Heights with her dad, Billy Joe, and her stepmother, Shirley. Her and her older brother's biological mother left town and moved to Virginia after Cheryl was born.
Sadly, it doesn't seem that Cheryl and her brothers like had much, if any, interaction with their mother after she left them in Kentucky. Billy Joe's father lived in Pendleton County, but Billy Joe himself grew up in Ohio, possibly with his mother. We're not sure how he ended up in Kenton County, Kentucky, where his kids were born, and then why he moved his young family to Highland Heights, a neighboring Campbell County, but that's just where they were living when Cheryl disappeared.
So her childhood friend remembers Cheryl as a sweet and friendly girl who was happy when playing with the other kids on the street. doted on her younger toddler brother and was rarely outside playing without him in tow. A relative of the family also told the author of the blog that Cheryl was a happy little girl. She had a little dog, Sparky, that she enjoyed playing with.
One of the most difficult things to talk about in this case is the fact that Cheryl vanished and was eventually murdered on the morning of her 10th birthday.
So on the morning of October 19th, 1971, her birthday. That is... As a kid, birthdays are the best thing in the whole world because it's a day that's about you.
And it's a milestone birthday.
Yeah,
you're like, I'm 10? Double digits, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going ham on my 10th birthday.
For real.
On that cake and ice cream.
Let's go.
She was dressed in a plaid jumper and a gold blouse. Her brothers left for the bus stop at the top of Rose Avenue without their sister. And some reports say that she was running late. Other reports state that she actually arrived early to a friend's house.
When they weren't ready to leave for school yet, Cheryl said she'd come back in a few minutes to meet them. But of course, she never did. And Cheryl's dad reported that she left out the back door of the house around 6:25 a.m. He saw her disappear into a dense fog as she started her walk up the street to the bus stop.
But Cheryl never boarded the bus. No one seemed to notice. Cheryl was not at school that day, and no one called home to see where she was because that was not standard practice at the time.
Literally?
But I don't ever remember the school calling when I was out.
Oh. They freaking flipped a cartwheel and told Nana everything.
When you didn't come to school?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hate them.
Okay, maybe the school did call and I just didn't ever know about it or something.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. But I'm glad they do that, actually, because if my kid's not at school, you better let me know, because...
Yeah. Finally, schools are like, oh yeah, kids don't run away when they're two.
Yeah.
I just realized that.
Except, one time, a family member of mine left school at, like, in, like, first grade to walk home.
Stop.
Yeah. Hiawassee Dam on 294. They were walking down 294. I'm traumatized.
Good. Anyway.
So, when the school let out and the students boarded the bus to head home, her brothers realized that she was not on the bus and had been absent from school and was just altogether unaccounted for.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew immediately that something was very, very wrong.
By all reports, the police were called, like, immediately, and the search for Cheryl was on. The police took it very seriously, like, right away. There was over 100 volunteer police and firemen. They all showed up to look for Cheryl. A search party was formed to go through the woods behind the homes on Rose Avenue, and they didn't find anything. Cheryl's older brother, Mickey, and her dad, Billy Joe, were frantically searching drainage ditches. They found nothing. There was absolutely nothing. No coat, no clothing, no backpack. And she was literally just gone.
Did they say how far she lived from the bus stop?
Mm-mm.
No. So, the residents of Rose Avenue in Highland Heights were frantically searching for Cheryl. And by late afternoon, the search was underway to try and find her. Hundreds of police and fire personnel responded to the small street to help look for the girl or just for any clues at all. Like, they, you know, aren't finding anything. And then when the kids returned home from school that afternoon, the news about Cheryl was spreading. It was then that a chilling story began to spill out of some of the neighborhood kids. Some people have said, though, that many of the elementary school kids thought Cheryl had just ran away.
Not really. People don't do that thing.
Did her brothers, like, tell the bus driver or somebody at the school, or did they just wait till they got home to tell the parents that, you know, she wasn't on the bus, or do we know? Or...
I don't know for sure, but I would think that they probably asked the bus driver where, if they had seen their sister.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, maybe she had gotten on a wrong bus or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Cheryl's dad and brother. Wait, were you done?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cheryl's dad and brothers helped search, like we said. They knocked on neighbors' doors. they were hoping that they would find her, like hoping she just ran away. But on day two, as the Rose Avenue kids returned to school, they no longer walked alone. Some stopped riding the bus, parents opting to drive them to school instead. The kids were scared to play outside. They were afraid of what or who, like, might be lingering around, like, trying to hurt them.
Yeah, that's so scary.
And the police brought in search dogs to help track Cheryl, but nothing.
So, in the Cincinnati Inquirer, the police are quoted as saying that they suspected a child molester could be walking the streets, or that Cheryl may have willingly run and hid in the woods behind her home that morning. Her dad disputed this, saying that he didn't consider it likely his daughter would walk into the steep, wooded hillside alone in the dark fog. And Mr. Spiegel also stated that Cheryl hadn't missed school at all that year, and he knew of no reason why she wouldn't have gone to school that day.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, it's not just...
Most young kids don't miss school.
Mm-mm.
In a single article, six various accounts were written in one article, to explain, like, what may have become of Cheryl. It was reported that some of Cheryl's classmates recalled her saying the day before she disappeared that I might not be in school on my birthday. An old black pickup truck was reported in the area the days before the disappearance. The driver had littered beer cans in the street. A witness in a nearby town had seen a girl with a man in a car at a filling station. Another witness had seen a girl matching Cheryl's description sitting with a young man at a bus stop at 2 a.m. on the day after her disappearance. A school bus driver thought he may have picked her up on a nearby street Wednesday morning and transported her to the local high school.
What?
I know. And last, police were still pushing the runaway theory, saying that she may have hopped a bus to see her mom in Virginia.
Yeah.
I love how people just... There. I know. I love how people just act like 9 and 10-year-olds are just...
I know.
Like, raring to go, gonna catch a greyhound, no big deal.
But if she did call some of her classmates and say that she may not be on school, may not be in school on her birthday, do you think maybe somebody had been grooming her?
I do.
The man in the black pickup truck?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, I wonder if they ever questioned this man or found him or anything.
I think that somebody was like, okay, dress nice. It's for your birthday. I'm going to take you somewhere nice for your birthday. I'm going to pick you up in the morning. You know, just go out like you're going to your bus.
School, yeah.
And I'll come pick you up.
Somebody that had befriended her, probably.
For sure.
Yeah. So a man reported that he had seen an older girl and a girl resembling Cheryl hitchhiking. He saw them get picked up in Clifton on Wednesday night, and that the younger girl was quiet and wearing a gold-colored shirt, the same color Cheryl was reported to have been wearing. Because Cheryl's maternal grandmother lived in that area, and because she had lived with her grandma for a time a few years earlier, police suspected that she may have been trying to get to her grandma's house in the Cincinnati area. Police reported that they had checked out 25 to 30 leads and none had led to Cheryl. They still believe she may have run away, but would have had some adult assistance. An employee at Highland Heights Elementary School recalled Cheryl saying that she wouldn't be at school on her birthday because she was going with her uncle to see her grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but honestly, to a child, like, somebody probably could have tricked her into thinking that was her uncle.
We've all had a bunch of uncles, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And this is why it's not solved. It's the police.
Yeah, why do they keep... She had adult assistance to run away.
Yeah, that's called abduction, bro.
Yeah, not assisted runaway. I don't know. Never heard of that.
The Highland Heights Police Department asked the FBI for help in gathering fingerprints from the Spiegel household and from Cheryl's belongings. They weren't sure the FBI could help, though, since there was no evidence of a crime. Okay. The police mailed flyers with Cheryl's info to police departments in Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, Virginia, and Florida. Why not Georgia? police were also following...
Or Tennessee or North Carolina or South Carolina or all the other states. Bro. Get this out.
There must be a connection, though, I guess. Police were also following a lead given by neighbors of the Spiegels who said they saw a vehicle in the neighborhood with Virginia license plates about a week before Cheryl disappeared. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. A week's fast, though, to, like, convince a child to come with you.
It is, yeah.
But you never know.
It's true.
So, Cheryl's mother called the Campbell County Police to report that her neighbor in Virginia had told her Cheryl had been found.
That's awful.
What? Virginia then had to tell, or she was curious as to whether this was true or not. It obviously is not. And police were interested to know how this rumor had gotten started. Neighbors and friends of Cheryl's had been together, or had come together, to start a missing persons fund to help raise reward money for individuals who would come forward with information about Cheryl's whereabouts. The fund reached $1,200, and the police publicly stated that they would add another $1,000 to it. That's about $14,700 today.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that is a lot of money.
One childhood friend of Cheryl's recounted that her mother eventually told the police it was time to leave her children alone. She's like, they already explained everything. Like, stop talking to my kids. I mean, bro, like, they just want to find this girl.
Yeah.
I'm sure the girl's traumatized. Like, they're already traumatized, period.
Yeah, literally.
So, they're just questioning them, and they need to talk about it. So, a newspaper reporter frequented the neighborhood trying to find small bits of new information in order to give a daily update of what was occurring on the small street and what the latest news from the police was. Kids from the neighborhood and from the Highland Heights Elementary School remember being terrified as they heard adults talking in quiet whispers about the case, finding themselves worried that this could happen again. It seems that people close to Cheryl really cared about where she was.
Mm-hmm. Did they not go and ask the mom, like, the mom's neighbor, like, where did you hear that she was found?
I hope so. There's nothing else ever mentioned about her that I could find.
Because I feel like either they were just being really evil to Cheryl's mother, or they heard that somewhere, or there was some reason that they wanted people to think she was found.
That's like the worst gossip.
Yeah.
It's not even gossip. That's like somebody's life.
Yeah.
But even so, the case was both baffling and convoluted, and even worse, already, like, growing cold.
That's so sad. It literally was cold from the get-go because there's nothing, really.
They're like, oh, she probably ran away.
So Cheryl's mother in Virginia genuinely seemed concerned about her missing daughter, and police eventually decided that Cheryl had not left to go to Virginia, and classmates of Cheryl's then and still now report that Cheryl did say that she was not going to be at school on her birthday. I think that's very important. Did she just say she wasn't going to be at school and didn't tell any of them anything else?
She just said that, like, I'm not going to be at school on my birthday. Like, that's what the classmates say. Mm-hmm. Apparently, she said that something special was planned.
So, obviously, in order for her to know this, she would either have had to have been told that she was going to be doing something else during the day of her birthday, or she had to plan something unknown to the family.
Because the family was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Why? I don't know why she would have told you she wasn't going to be here.
What if, you know, and... You could take this two ways. Like, obviously, somebody's been telling her this, which is obviously what it looks like because she just got up and got dressed. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, which it doesn't sound like because I think the family would have said this, maybe she had been asking not to come to school. And they were like, no, you're going to school. You're going to school. And she just thought that, like, on her birthday, she'd ask. And they'd be like, well, it's your birthday.
Yeah.
You know how kids are sometimes. So... But I think, you know, somebody had told her something.
For sure.
So, if she was going to meet up with someone to take her somewhere on her birthday, and she hadn't told her family, would she risk telling the kids and adults at school? And if she had been told she was going to do something fun on her birthday, could it have been by a family member, you know, outside of...
Yeah, an uncle.
Yeah, really. You know, that's a possibility. But then why would she have been dressed and heading out for school that morning if the family was going to take her to do something fun? I feel like, too, if it was a family member, even if they were like, don't say anything. I feel like...
It's a surprise for everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Your dad's in on it. If you say something, he's going to deny it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so... the story from her dad was that he saw her leave, presumably for the bus stop, so it doesn't seem like he had something planned for her. Was nothing planned, and she just said that she was going to do something fun so people wouldn't know that she, in all likelihood, was not going to do anything special for her birthday?
I mean, I think she was under the impression that somebody was doing something for her birthday.
Yeah. I don't think she... No.
Bless her heart.
Yeah, I don't really think she would have been that embarrassed.
No. But what are the chances that it was Cheryl, of all the kids on the street, who was randomly abducted on her birthday after she told people she would not be in school that very day?
Oh, yeah.
So somebody 100% told her they were doing something for her birthday.
Yeah.
It's reported that on school mornings, Cheryl was usually very early. She would head to her friends' houses and wait for them to get ready so she had someone to walk to the bus stop with. A childhood friend remembers Cheryl being at her house early that morning, like we said, saying that she'd come back, and she didn't. Her family contradicted this, though, and said she was actually running late that day. 6:30 in the morning, though, is early.
Yeah.
That's late? I mean, I don't know, I guess, but...
Are they saying that they don't think she was at their friend's house?
No, the family's saying that, like, she was running late for her usual self.
Oh, okay.
That's not true, though, because her friend said that when she got there that morning, they said, we're not even ready, girl.
Yeah,
like,
it was
early.
You're
gonna have to wait.
Yeah.
So if that's late, there's no way.
But why would she have went to a friend's house if she wasn't going to school that day?
I know.
And another thing I was thinking is, like, maybe she said she wasn't going to be at school that day because she just wasn't going to go.
Yeah.
And then thought, you know, kids do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but it is odd that she would have been met with foul play that day. But
yeah.
You never know, like, where she walked or what she did or anything.
Right.
So, I don't know. This is so
upsetting.
So, if she had planned to meet up with someone that morning who was going to take her to see her grandma, might this be why she was running late? Was she stalling to wait for a particular time to meet up with her ride?
Right.
Could this be an actual uncle? So, they're still researching who that could have been. Or was it a man that she or her family referred to as an uncle? Had an adult befriended Cheryl, earned her trust, convinced her to meet him that morning so that he could take her to her grandma's for her birthday when something more evil was actually being planned? But if she was going to meet up with someone, how did no one see her this morning or vehicle waiting for her that morning? Or did someone, like, see this and just not realize that it was significant?
Maybe. Like, most people minded their business back then. It's so annoying.
And I wonder, too, like, this was such a little town. I mean, he probably could just have been, like, walk, you know, like, get on this road, and it could be very, you know, there are roads around here where you could get on, and you might not see anybody the whole time you're on the road.
Yeah, exactly.
And early in the morning?
Mm-hmm. And are you staring at your window at 6:30 a.m. constantly?
Literally.
No. And, like, I'm not going to lie, because we do a true crime podcast and we're so into it and everything, if I saw a kid talking to somebody, I'd be like, that's freakish. But if I was a normal person, I'd probably be like, oh, that's her parent.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, even after multiple reports that she could have ran away and all the searching, questioning literally everybody, Cheryl was found November 1st, 1971, 13 days after she vanished. Cheryl was found by a milk delivery man on his regular route on New Hope Road at around 3 p.m., according to the Cincinnati Inquirer. New Hope Road is about 20 miles from her home. On this day, and also the Monday prior, he noticed that there, in the piles of scattered trash, there was an odd stacking of rocks, like, in the creek bed, next to the culvert opening beneath the small bridge, and he recounted to the newspaper reporters that he thought he had noticed the rocks a week before, but he, like, didn't bother to look into it. But on this Monday, however, seeing that the rocks were still there and thinking about how they could not have been naturally gathered so neatly that way, he was like, well, I'm just gonna, like, see, you know. And as he moved down the side of the creek, navigating around the garbage, he stood next to the rock structure and began pulling away the top two rocks on the pile. As each rock dropped from the pile into the creek bed, he saw a body protruding under the remaining rock pile.
This is odd, though, that he even went to check that out.
I know. I don't like him.
No.
They say that they exclude him later, but I don't like him.
I would not ever check that.
No.
I mean, we go to the creek all the time, and yeah, sometimes we, like, stack up rocks.
Okay.
You know, for...
Finding a mound of rocks is not weird, dude. Okay, no. Let me tell you, I have a good friend, and I know her family really well. I know she's probably listening, so she knows what I'm talking about, but her uncle, was a preacher, and out next to a creek... like every day he would take a rock and he would pray for somebody and put a rock on a pile, and he had like a 4-foot pile of rocks.
Yeah,
you could have had a body in that, but like,
yeah,
a lot of people pile rocks up around here.
Mm-hmm.
Just for fun, just for anything. And this is over a bridge. I'm not gonna like go over a bridge and be like, those are some weird rocks, let me just open the rocks up.
Yeah,
what did you think was gonna be under there?
Literally, this is so weird.
I mean, what do you think they were hiding? A freaking Twinkie?
Yeah,
they're obviously hiding something. And also, like, how did you even notice that in a culvert?
I know.
How did you even notice rocks in a truck? Why were you looking down at rocks? Like, I'm sorry, I don't want to, like, convict this guy, but...
I know, that's odd to me.
These are, like, my questions.
So, obviously, he runs back up the embankment, jumps in his truck, left the area... to find a phone to call the authorities, because this is the 70s, didn't have a cell phone. So a state police investigator and two Pendleton County sheriff officers climbed down into the culvert, setting aside what remained of the mound of 7 rocks. And what laid in front of the investigators was a horrific sight. The badly decomposed body of an unclothed child laying face down in about a foot of water in the creek bed. The county coroner arrived, and after his work was done, he summoned a local funeral home, who then transported Cheryl to the funeral home parlor in Pendleton County. From there, Cheryl was transported to Hamilton County Morgue in Cincinnati for an autopsy, and so official identification could be done. Whoever killed Cheryl stabbed her 26 times. A 10-year-old.
On her birthday. The stab wounds were done in a circular motion on her back, and some wounds were so deep that they went through to her chest and through her little abdomen. The official cause of death was internal hemorrhaging due to the stabbing. After she was so viciously killed, Cheryl was brutalized even more in what was described as being raped with, quote, instruments. The only outstanding missing persons case in the Northern Kentucky area was Cheryl's, and the approximate age and gender of the body fit Cheryl's description, but a definite identification would take time. The next day, Tuesday, November 2nd, the family was informed that the body of a girl had been discovered in Pendleton County, and it could be her. I'm disgusted.
Literally.
This is probably one of the worst
I've
ever heard.
So, also, in another horrible twist, Cheryl's brother, Mark's birthday, was on the day that the family found out Cheryl had been found. He turned 11 years old. In an interview, the Cincinnati Enquirer newspaper in 1993, Mark Spiegel recounted, "Her body was found on my birthday. I lost my best friend. It screwed up my life." The article also stated that the brothers didn't receive counseling after her death, and no one really ever spoke to them about how they were feeling. Hmm. What? I hate the 70s. Yeah, I just feel like it wasn't available back then, probably, even if her parents wanted it.
Yeah, and, like, why didn't they ask, like, "Are you okay, honey? Like, it's your fucking birthday."
Yeah, but it's probably so hard for the family. Like, it would be so hard to talk to your 11-year-old about your 10-year-old's violent murder.
Oh, I know.
On her birthday.
Yeah.
So, the transport and autopsy of Cheryl took a couple of days, and Thursday, November 4th, Billy Joe Spiegel was asked to report to the Hamilton County Morgue to identify his daughter. Cheryl had never been to a dentist, so her teeth could not be compared against dental records.
So we're starting to get a pattern here, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're starting to see that maybe her parents are a little bit neglectful.
Probably not for the 70s.
I don't know, though. They didn't even get her a headstone.
They probably did have money, honestly.
That's what they said, yeah.
They're expensive.
I don't.
And they have other children. That's sad.
I know. Like, I want to be fair, but, like, I can't help but be so mad.
I know.
Because there's other things, too.
Yeah. But you have to remember it was 50 years ago and how different, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah. I know.
You know. So, her fingerprints were taken from items in the Spiegel home, but because she had laid in the elements for 2 weeks, she had no viable skin on her fingers to compare prints to. Billy Joe tried to identify her, but couldn't be absolutely certain. So, more specific slides were prepared for him, showing her facial profile, teeth patterns, and other characteristics. And it was then that he confirmed that the body to be that of his daughter, Cheryl Spiegel.
Ruin me. I would unalive myself if that was my child.
I know.
How do you go on? You don't. You don't go on. You don't. I mean, maybe you do, but
I know.
I'm not strong enough.
And, like, he had other kids. How did he, like, I don't know.
Well, like, her brother said, like, it ruined my life.
Yeah, and it probably literally, I don't think the parents knew counseling was probably a thing because this was such a small rural community. It probably wasn't a thing where they were. It probably wasn't offered. The parents, I'm sure, got no counseling.
For sure.
They're probably religious and to Christians, you know.
Give it to God.
Yeah. Everything happens for a reason. Pray. And I feel like that is what they said in the 70s, and now we know that sometimes you need professional help.
Yeah, grief counseling.
So it probably was really hard for Billy Joe.
Yeah, they're victims, too.
I mean, yeah.
And he was not a single dad, you know. Mm-hmm. They had Charlie, but
the stepmom, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
it's hard.
I mean, his wife left him. Like, what do you do? A print was able to be made of Cheryl's foot and compared with the footprints taken at the hospital in 1961 when she was born. They matched. By Friday, November 5th, 1971, the papers reported that Cheryl was definitely the girl found in the culvert in Pendleton County and that she had without a doubt suffered a brutal death. And on Sunday, November 6th, 1971. On Saturday, November 6, 1971, a funeral service was held for Cheryl at a funeral home in nearby Covington, Kentucky. Her obituary is remarkably simple and brief. The only two words used to describe her is beloved and dear. And she was placed in an unmarked grave.
That is so sad. But also about the obituary, I don't know, like, there was so much that you would want to say, but you wouldn't want to say because you don't ever want to have to write your child's obituary.
And you're in shock, and you're like, I don't want people to know my business.
Yeah.
Like, what would I say?
Yeah.
And somebody killed her, so obviously somebody was already up in their business.
Yeah.
So why would they want more people? Exactly. This is what I can't get past about the unmarked grave thing. I understand no money. But what I think of is Little Miss Nobody, when they found her and the community bought her a headstone, just a little headstone. And the community was like, don't talk to my kids. They're traumatized. Da, da, da. This community sounds like they didn't want to raise money or anything.
I know.
It's a headstone. Help the family.
What about that reward money? Why couldn't they have used a little of that for, you know, something?
I wonder if it went to the milkman.
Sick. I did. It did. I'm sure.
Yeah. But, like, when a student dies, usually the school system will, like, give you a little bit of money for something.
Yeah.
Or raise money for you. Or, yeah. I don't understand no money. I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, this is very personal, but, like, my uncle, he passed away, and his grave was marked, but we didn't have money for a headstone.
Yeah.
And he still doesn't have one because they're so expensive now.
Yeah.
And the funeral itself was like 10 plus.
Yeah.
So
it's so expensive.
It's hard to lay your loved ones to rest. And so there's sides to both.
Yeah. I feel like for a little girl, though, the community.
I know. That's where I come back to. I'm like, just do it.
I know. This is so weird.
Like, no.
I'm surprised that, like, a singular person didn't, like, hear about this and donate a headstone.
Yeah. Like, how about the funeral home?
I know.
Make it. Just make it.
I mean, the funeral home doesn't make the headstone.
Right, yeah.
But an engraving or whoever makes the headstone.
Literally just make it.
I know.
And pretend it doesn't cost anything.
I know. Write it off on your taxes. I feel like you could.
You can.
If you donated a headstone.
Yeah, I mean.
Anyway, so in the way of Cheryl's clothing, her clothing included her shoes that have never been found. Oh, wait. So none of Cheryl's clothing has ever been found, like even her shoes. So in 1971, in New Hope Road was not easy to stumble up on. Even back then, it was not a section of road that they even traveled. Some women have said that then and now they believe that the person who killed Cheryl had to have known that road, spent time on it, traveled it, and or felt comfortable there.
No, ma'am. Sorry, yep. But just saying.
As much as it pains them to think, some people familiar with this case, with the case in Pendleton County, felt in 1971 and still today that the killer was probably a person with ties to their community. Despite the police at the time inciting it was a man from Highland Heights who committed the murder. Despite the police at the time insisting it was a man from Highland Heights who committed the murder. That's what I was saying. There's like these roads that you could drive down where nobody.
Yeah, literally. Let me show you the road.
I never see you.
I have a picture of the. It's actually a little bridge. Obviously, she was in a creek, but. So Amber's looking at the.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me a milkman saw a pile of rocks for 3 days in a row or something and was like, that's weird. I think he started to feel guilty.
Yeah. I don't know how he's. Where's the culvert?
I guess there was like a culvert under there.
How would he have seen that? Literally how?
Culverts are dark.
Okay, if the bridge and culvert looked the way in the 70s that it looks today or whenever this photo that we're looking at was taken, I think the milkman needs to be looked at a little more.
The milkman sounds insane to me.
Yeah.
Sorry,
and like, I'm working but I'm going to stop and go look at these rocks.
Yeah, I've never seen a suspicious rock in my life, dude.
Mm-mm. I've never thought, let me go look at that pile of rocks.
I know.
And like, you know.
New Hope Road was over 20 miles from Rose Avenue, where Cheryl lived, like we said. It would have been at least a 20-minute car ride there, but probably more because it looked, like, really old and, like, narrow. Mm-hmm. At the time, there were two possible ways to get to New Hope Road from Highland Heights, and both involved traveling on a back road. Anywhere along the way, the killer could have easily, like, gotten rid of Cheryl's body and a multitude of other quiet locations, likely without being noticed. But he didn't. If during that long car ride Cheryl was still alive, the killer couldn't just stop at any of the other locations to kill her, because he'd still run the risk of him or his car being seen, or possibly even Cheryl herself being seen or heard. He was heading to a place with which he was comfortable and familiar in order to assault Cheryl. Killing her was either planned or happened as a result of fighting back. New Hope Road was a place where, in a culvert under a bridge with garbage scattered around, screams would likely not be heard, and a small body would likely not be noticed amongst the garbage if a passerby were to happen drive through. The milkman.
Yeah.
So the possibilities are low, but then, like, why did the milkman notice?
Exactly. And, okay, the milkman notices it. Does he only go there once a week? Because it said he thought he might have seen it the previous Monday, but he wasn't sure.
I think he goes there like a couple times a week. They have to, because it's like fresh milk. Right?
I mean, you get fresh milk, but you just put it in your fridge.
I know, but maybe he's delivering some extra bottles to a big family or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he could come multiple times a week. Or he could have come once a week. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Why hadn't this family that lives where he was delivering to been curious about the rocks?
Why are you in the FBI? You think of things I don't even think of. They should question them.
Yeah.
And be like, was he on time?
Any families that lived past the bridge should have been questioned.
Yeah, like everybody on his route should have been questioned. His entire timeline should have been looked into.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, was he late? Did he have anything on him? Did he look distraught? Did, you know?
Well, did he deliver milk that day, though?
Right.
No. The day that... What day of the week was it when she went missing?
I think a Wednesday.
That's what I was thinking. They should have seen, he may not have even went on New Hope Road on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
He may have had a different route on Wednesdays, but just, or he may have been off.
Yeah, exactly.
And abducted her.
And no one would think anything. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's just a milkman. Like, people might need milk.
And, I don't know, that's just so crazy that, I don't know. I feel like if the milkman thought that the rocks were so odd and could see them so well, a family that lived on the road would have thought it first.
I swear to God, Amber, you're blowing my mind. You've solved it. I'm, like, not being dramatic. This is, like, so true. Wouldn't they notice the rocks, too?
And be suspicious?
Bye. Dude. He did it.
I mean,
like,
they need some real
obviously
good
allegedly in our opinion.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. How are they disproving that, or how are they proving that it wasn't him?
Well, you know how the police are. Oh, it just wasn't him. Don't worry about it.
He's a good man.
he's a good man.
So a stabbing death like this shows that the assailant was filled with rage in order to repeatedly deliver blows to someone in that manner. And furthermore, stabbing usually indicates a personal connection to the victim because it brings the perpetrator close to the victim while they're stabbing them.
And did the milkman deliver to Rose Avenue?
Exactly.
I need to know that.
Yeah, or did he have maybe like a child or a family member in Cheryl's class at school?
I'm screaming.
Met her at a birthday party or something.
After school pickup.
Mm-hmm. You never know. So, we don't know what kind of knife was used or why it was in such a pattern on her back. And there are other ways that a child could be killed. And the fact that Cheryl was not killed those ways also says something. She was not strangled or shot, nor did she die from blunt force trauma. She was stabbed. Like, from obviously somebody full of rage, because she was stabbed 26 times.
Mm-hmm. This knife has to be huge. I mean, really.
It was going all the way.
Yeah. That's big.
Yeah.
It's like a 10-inch knife, at least. Cheryl was rarely outside without her younger brother, Darren, on her hip, and she was not allowed to put him down. So she'd carry him and have him and have to miss out on activities like jump rope and running and playing. Cheryl got creative and would push Darren in a stroller so that he wasn't on the ground and running around. So, like, her parents were like, don't put him down.
Oh, I thought it meant like Darren was like,
no,
don't put me down.
But also she didn't have to carry, she didn't have to carry him constantly. She put him in a stroller. So some of Cheryl's friends had a sense that Cheryl didn't want to go home. She would sometimes hide when she was called inside by her dad or stepmom. We all did that from time to time when we were kids, not wanting the fun to be over, but Cheryl's friends felt that it was more than that. On school mornings, the Rose Avenue kids would catch the bus at 6:30 a.m. But why do the friends say that they weren't ready yet? It's like literally time for the bus. Okay, so she goes to their house at 6:30 a.m. They're like, dude, I'm not ready yet. And she was running late, and it's 6:30. The bus is at 6:30. Cheryl's probably like, dude, I gotta go.
Go.
Like, I'm gonna be late.
But if she said, I'll be back later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
she'd be back later.
She told her friends she would not be at school. So she's coming to their house, and she's like, come on. They're like, why are you even here? Like you said, you weren't coming.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
I need to know more.
So, neighbors have actually reported that Cheryl was up early every morning and will be out on Rose Avenue, sometimes as early as 5:30 a.m. and dressed for school, waiting for the light to come on.
Mm-mm.
In, you know, the neighboring kids' houses. And once she saw the dim glow in the morning darkness from a light inside one of these houses, she would then gently knock on the door to see if she could come in and wait in order to have someone to walk to the bus stop with.
That is so precious.
Yeah. And I think that probably does speak a lot about her parents.
It does.
So.
There was a lot of parents too that'd be like, you better have your little ass out of here at a certain time and don't come back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think that was her parents, though, because her brothers were still there.
Right. Like, you better be dying before you come back.
So, in the days leading up to Cheryl's disappearance, classmates reported that Cheryl was saving her lunch money and telling them it was so she could run away. This would be a fairly big detail for a 9-year-old to arrange, and Cheryl seemed angry and bothered by something. If this is true, then Cheryl was showing signs that she no longer wanted to be a part of whatever was going on behind the closed doors of her home.
Obviously. I mean, all kids want to run away, though, so.
But. I don't know.
If you had asked me, I literally thought I could, like, do anything.
Yeah.
I threatened to run away so
many times. Oh, yeah.
It's reported that Cheryl's stepmom, Shirley, was less than kind to Cheryl and not very friendly to other neighbors. Cheryl's friends described the situation as a wicked stepmother-type relationship. It's also reported that that biker gang-type men would come and go from the Spiegel household. Also, Shirley supposedly had a brother with a criminal record who would spend time around the house.
An uncle?
Literally!
It's uncle. Literally. So, Billy Joe was the only child born to his parents who divorced when he was young. And though Billy Joe's dad would eventually remarry, he never had any other children. And Billy Joe was his only son, and Cheryl was his only granddaughter. And while Billy Joe's dad continued to live in Gardensville, Kentucky, Billy Joe moved to Ohio, where he lived with his mother. His home in Ohio was a far distance from Gardensville, so because he only occasionally visited with his father, the extended family wasn't as close to Billy Joe as they were with other relatives. In later years, they remembered seeing Billy Joe and his kids at a couple of family reunions, but did not know them well.
I don't know what to say. It sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, Billy Joe obviously didn't have, like, a, great-sounding life. Like,
no.
I mean, obviously, like, okay, everybody in this family has a hard time with relationships, apparently, you know?
Yeah.
The Spiegel family was not a wealthy one, but they were a tight-knit country farming family who took care of each other. They didn't necessarily have the means to travel far outside of Pendleton County, especially in 1971 when the roads in and out of the county were even less developed than they are now. Not many family members made the trip to Covington for Cheryl's funeral because it was a far distance for them to travel. And because they just weren't that close to Billy Joe anymore. Sorry, but like that? You're not going for like that. You're going to pay your respects. But I understand, like, if you can't get out there.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with Billy Joe. Like, don't even bring that up.
No.
If Cheryl's family had been living in Pendleton County at the time, the whole Spiegel clan would have rallied and not only sought justice for Cheryl, but would have made sure she had a headstone after she was buried. Like the extended family. And it turns out that the reason she didn't have one is because of the money. That's what they say.
Okay, but why couldn't they do that from outside of Pendleton County?
Yeah, like you don't have money outside of Pendleton County?
Literally. Like, can't buy a headstone.
You ever heard of the USPS? Money Order?
Literally
Western
something.
Union?
So, the Spiegel family heard that it was a man from up by where Cheryl lived, but no one knew who it was that the police were suspecting. Some in the family worried that if Billy Joe or his dad knew who had done it, that they would seek vengeance on their own. And sometime, yeah, honestly. And sometime after Cheryl was killed, Billy Joe actually moved his family back to Ohio. And the extended Spiegel family saw this as a good thing. And the memories of Rose Avenue were too tough, and the knowledge that Cheryl's killer was possibly living in close proximity to them was more than they could bear. And furthermore, they had become frustrated with the lack of action in Cheryl's case. Billy Joe Spiegel unfortunately died of cancer at the age of 53, and he was buried as close to Cheryl as possible, just two plots over from his only daughter, who went to her grave 17 years before him. And the extended family saw the three Spiegel sons at a couple of family reunions through the years, but as they grew and started their own families and eventually went on to bury their dad and their grandpa Spiegel, venturing down to Pendleton County to visit with their dad's extended family became less frequent until it ended all together.
I'm crying. This family is, like, so tragic.
I know. It's sad.
Her youngest brother was only 2 years old when she was killed. Her brother Mark was 10 when she was killed, and then he turned 11 when they found out. And Mickey was 13. There's some speculation that it could have been one of the brothers, but, like, that's probably not what happened.
Exactly.
And they're accounted for on the day of October 19th, and they were seen that morning on the street and on the bus and at school and et cetera.
And they carried Cheryl 20 miles?
Yeah, and they're the ones that even said that she's not here.
Yeah.
They carried Cheryl. Yeah, literally.
Literally.
And the classmates remember them being at school, so.
Yeah.
So the only way that one of them could have murdered her is if it would happen the night before and they were able to be normal the next day. Didn't happen. Next.
Literally. So, Cheryl's brothers continued to talk to reporters as late as the 1990s about their resolve to find her killer. And Mark shared how her murder messed up his life in his interview. After suspicions of infidelity on the part of Billy Joe surfaced, Cheryl's mom left the home and eventually moved to Virginia. There was some confusion about her day to appear in Kentucky court regarding custody of the children, and she missed the court appearance. Therefore, the judge awarded custody to Billy Joe. Cheryl's mom had little money, and in the 1960s, the courts oftentimes sided with the father She felt defeated, unable to afford an attorney, transportation back and forth from Virginia to Kentucky, and the means to actually pay for three kids on her own. She therefore did not contest the ruling, and Billie Joe retained custody, allowing the children to stay with her dad, who had been consistently in their lives since she left town.
Literally.
Cheryl's mother was devastated when her daughter was found murdered, and the family recalls being told that not only would Cheryl be buried next to her brother, who had died of SIDS in 1959, but that she would also have a headstone with an angel on it.
That's what they told her. They were like, she's going to have a headstone, it's going to have an angel on it, and she's going to be buried next to her little brother.
Who told her that? The dad?
Who told Cheryl's mom that?
Yeah.
I have no clue. I really don't. Sadly, we now know that neither one of these requests was honored. To further erase her mother from her life, Cheryl's mom's name is not even mentioned
in
Cheryl's obituary. Having outlived Cheryl by 15 years, her mother died in 1986, the age of 48, after suffering a brain aneurysm.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So freaking sad. She's buried in Virginia next to her second husband. Whatever happened in her marriage to Billie Joe, Cheryl's mom felt that it was best to leave the relationship and the family. Maybe like her extended family, she trusted her ex-husband with the care of her children, knowing she was not capable of raising them herself.
So, we know that Cheryl was the last child to be born from the union of her dad and her biological mother. Her birth was in 1961. Her younger brother, Darren, was born in 1968. So, somewhere between Cheryl and Darren's birth, Billie Joe and his first wife divorced, and he met and married his second wife, Shirley, we know they were living in Highland Heights in 1971 when Cheryl was murdered. Not long after that, they moved out of Highland Heights. Billie Joe and Shirley got divorced in 1974. So, what about the milkman? He was a resident of Grant County, Kentucky in 1971, which is a county that butts up to Pendleton County, Kentucky. And it makes sense that he would deliver milk in a county that was close to his home. Mm-hmm. However, he worked for Territh Dairy, whose home base was located in Newport, Kentucky, in the county of Campbell.
Mm-hmm. It's not clear on the path that the milk truck driver would travel, but it seems that he did traverse the three different counties when setting out to deliver milk, possibly beginning in Grant County, then traveling to Trough Dairy in Newport, then on to Pendleton, where he'd make his deliveries. Once he was done with the deliveries, he may have had to travel back to Newport to drop off his truck and would return home to Grant County. This seems like a lot of driving in one day, so there's some speculation that he may not have had the same daily route. Possibly just a couple times a week did he make his way out to the Pendleton area. After discovering Cheryl's body, the milkman was highly investigated, quote unquote. The police spent a lot of time looking into him and accounting for his whereabouts daily and during the time Cheryl was missing. He may have passed through Highland Heights in the mornings, either on his way to the dairy company or once he had boarded his delivery truck and was making his way to Pendleton County. And he was familiar with New Hope Road due to his milk deliveries. So, that definitely, like, raises eyebrows, obviously. Yeah.
So, despite their efforts, the police could not connect the milkman to Cheryl's murder. The milkman has actually passed away in 2005 and is buried in his home county of Grant. There have been reports from former residents of Maple Avenue in Highland Heights about a man living in a home on their street who was a known child molester. Maple Avenue is a street that runs parallel to Rose Avenue, also containing modest homes on a narrow street, which in 1971 housed a close group of neighbors. One resident felt really strongly then about the molester possibly being involved in Cheryl's disappearance and murder after recalling that he had his brown sedan crushed within days of Cheryl's disappearance. Others who grew up on Maple all named the same person as being the molester living on their street, but word was disturbingly that he preferred boys.
Great. That's something that I want to know.
Literally.
That is suspicious that he crushed his sedan.
Yeah.
This man was interviewed, and he was considered a person of interest, but there was not enough evidence to tie him to the crime.
I wonder if he was familiar with New Hope Road, though.
He was.
The molester was?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So, on October 19th, or on October 17th, 1970, a 16-year-old girl named Cheryl Siegel, different than our Cheryl, who was Cheryl Spiegel,
yeah,
and a friend accepted a ride home from a male friend of a friend after a night of hanging out at a tavern in Cincinnati. Her friend was dropped off first, but Cheryl never made it home to her house. The man she accepted a ride from was a convicted named James Finley, who had a lengthy rap sheet. When Cheryl Siegel was found shot to death in a creek the next day, the bullet matched a gun found in the car that Finley was driving. And having been the last person seen with Cheryl, and having the murder weapon in his possession, finding blood in his car, and discovering the tire tracks by the creek matched that same vehicle, police arrested Finley rather quickly. He was convicted of the murder in June of 1971, and therefore could not have committed the crime against Cheryl Spiegel in October of 1971. The fact that they were killed almost a year to the day apart, their names were very similar, and they lived within miles of each other, led to speculation that the murders of Cheryl and Cheryl may have been connected, especially after Finley said that there would be more victims after he was arrested.
God, why say that? Just shut up, dude.
I wonder if he was, like, connected with somebody. Does James Finley know the milkman?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Literally.
One big suspect is called the man on the porch. And I will say that Beth really goes into detail on him. We don't go into too much detail, but, like, she really does the thing. He's a creepy guy, basically, who lives in town and stares at everyone that walks or drives by. The man on the porch, maternal grandfather, lived on New Hope Road, as well as did his uncle and his cousins. At one point, his parents and his sister, who, by the way, killed her own baby, lived on New Hope Road with his grandparents a year or so before he was born. After that, he and his sister lived with their grandma and possibly an aunt for some time in that very area of Pendleton County, and they spent a lot of time on New Hope Road, hanging out with their extended family, mostly cousins on their mother's side of the family.
Excuse me? His sister murdered her own baby?
I know.
That disturbs me so bad. She might have PPD, though.
Literally. After the man on the porch moved down to Pendleton County and eventually made his way to Highland Heights, living with his mom and stepdad, he continued to travel to Pendleton County, sometimes several times a week. When he did make his way south, he was often seen in the town of Foster, sometimes just driving around, sometimes accompanying another local man who was a carpet installer on his jobs, and other times visiting family on New Hope Road. And he was known to have been on the very road where Cheryl was found from time to time, dumping trash. Just saying.
Well, that's very suspicious.
Still the milkman.
I mean, I'm sorry. Why did you go check out those rocks? I mean.
Like, I don't believe him.
You know, like, they ask if you could have one case solved, what would it be? Mm-hmm. I think now it's this one.
I know, it used to be Delphine.
I know.
But this is... Between this one, Jesse McBain, Patricia Mann, and Delphine.
Oh my gosh.
That's like the Holy Trinity, dude.
I know, okay. So before Cheryl's body had been discovered, the man on the porch was seen with brown stains on his shirt.
He was.
Yeah. He was questioned, and he told people it was from rust from a hot water heater he had helped his cousin move. People living down there then found this to be very unsettling, and quite frankly, they didn't believe him, but at the time didn't know the significance. Other locals in Pendleton County said that when there were quiet whispers about their suspicions of this man, the police would tell them confidently that a man from Highland Heights was the main suspect to assuage their concerns. The police said the suspect lived in Highland Heights while the locals always steadfastly believed it had to be a person who knew the area.
Who knew the area of the dump.
Yeah, of the bridge.
Yeah.
I believe that because it's, I mean, it looks really rural out there. So the man on the porch fit both these descriptions. All of this time, could the police and the locals both have been correct in their opinions without really realizing it? Could they have been talking about the same person?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I
feel like these are there's two very good suspects they have.
Literally. We've yet to learn how thoroughly the man on the porch was investigated. And how soon after Cheryl disappeared was he questioned? When Cheryl disappeared from Highland Heights in 1971, the town police investigated her disappearance. They were a small department with limited resources, but by all accounts, they were doing their best to find her throughout the 13 days she was missing. Once her body was discovered in Pendleton County, the Kentucky State Police took over the case because Pendleton County was their jurisdiction at the time, meaning they were the police agency, like, in charge. And to this day, the entire file is housed with the state police.
As a part of the police investigation, the man on the porch was eventually considered to be a person of interest. And at some point, the police did talk to him and check to see if he was at work on the morning of October 19th, 1971. And what we have learned from former police officers is that the man on the porch was supposedly clocked in at work that morning, thus potentially eliminating him as a suspect. From here, we aren't sure how much the police looked at him or if they moved on from him being a suspect at this point, only to revisit him later as his behavior caught their attention. And just kind of as a little side note here, in recent years, people have come forward saying that a gentleman who worked with the man on the porch admitted that he clocked him in that day and that he was not actually there. This is all hearsay at this point and probably can't be proven true or untrue since it's almost 50 years later.
Literally.
I mean, unless this man's still alive and they could go and ask him. Like,
I know.
I feel like if you said, yes, I did clock him in that day, you're not lying about it.
Why would you make that up?
Literally.
It's like boring to like make stuff up.
I know. So, and most friends and family of Cheryl's haven't heard anything about the man on the porch.
They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. So the man on the porch thing, this is like between police and like, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And Beth has reported a lot on it. To this day, Cheryl's case is still unsolved. There are so many questions and so many theories. The author of the blog, Gone in the Fog, along with some friends, purchased a headstone for Cheryl in 2019.
Oh, yay. Thank you, Beth.
I know.
We applaud you.
We hope that Cheryl is never forgotten and that her case is solved. This October will be 50 years since her life was taken. She would have been 60 years old. And that is the very summarized retelling of the murder of Cheryl Spiegel. I'm sad.
Yeah. This is a very depressing case.
Yeah.
And I'm so sad that it's like 50 years later and they had two very good suspects that
I know.
I feel like probably they're probably looked into, but probably would be looked into better today just because.
Exactly.
Yeah, technology. There's more technology
and like
and resources,
better
and
training and.
Yeah.
Most of the investigators that were investigating it probably were just regular officers, had no specialized training.
Yeah.
This was Cheryl. It's the only picture of her on the internet.
That is so sad.
Oh. I can't.
So, and it sounds like Pendleton County, they didn't even have a police department. They, you know, because
they didn't. It was just the state.
So that's sad.
It's like even worse.
And it was awful that she was like submerged in water for 13 days because even if there was anything that they could have recovered.
I know. She didn't even have fingerprints.
Literally. That's just.
I doubt she even had like nails to like scrape under her face. I don't even know if they did that back then.
Probably not, because DNA wasn't as big of a thing.
Right.
Or a thing, probably at all, hardly.
If we're being like frank, I highly doubt that they could even collect like semen or anything. I know they collected it back then, just in case.
Yeah.
But I doubt they had anything like that.
Oh, you know, no, she was submerged.
No.
For 13 days. I don't know. I think the milkman is very suspicious, or was.
Right. He's,
you know.
I just can't help it.
Yeah. And even if you could tie him to the murder today, he's been dead for
he's
almost 20 years.
I know. I wonder.
I just feel like if the bridge looked like the picture that we've looked at, you know, in the 70s. In the 70s, it was probably even less. Like, it probably even looked worse.
Yeah.
Than what it does now. I feel like he wouldn't have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he was seeing it so well, somebody on the road would have seen it and thought it suspicious. I think he got a guilty conscience.
Me too.
And thought nobody's going to find her.
Mm-hmm. I have to, like, help.
Yeah, you know. I'll just find her.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds like it was in a hidden spot, too. Like, in a culvert?
Yeah, what? And, like,
under a bridge?
Under a bunch of rocks. That sounds like someone's embarrassed.
Yeah.
Obviously. They want to hide it. Okay, and you're just like average Joe is not going to go down there and just start breaking down a pile of rocks.
No, and it has to have been somebody, too, that was familiar with the road, like they are saying. It has to have been, because I just feel like if you didn't know that road was there, that it's like so tiny and out of the way, that you would be going out on a limb, driving down it, hoping to find a good spot to kill and assault somebody.
And I feel like he could have, like, whoever it was, could have, like, assaulted her in the woods or in the culvert. Culverts are huge.
Yeah.
She was so assaulted and, like, sexually assaulted, physically. There's no telling what she went through.
Literally. And I feel like it was, I feel like whoever it wasn't like a random thing. I feel like they had been grooming her.
Obviously.
Yeah.
What if he was like, oh, it's your birthday. Like, wait for me to come by because I have to go through here to get to the dairy. Wait for me. I'll come pick you up and I'll give you some ice cream for your birthday.
Yeah.
We went to the freaking dairy.
Or we'll go. I'll take you out to eat, or you can go on my route with me or anything.
Yeah.
And do we know, like, what, was this the only time that she, like, missed school?
That year, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was. Mm-hmm. I was saying maybe it, like, picked her up before. And
oh, I don't know about that. Mm-mm.
You know, I remember, I don't know what case it was, and this is off topic, but there was, like, some case, and a girl came home, and she had some Barbies, and said that her new family gave them to her.
Kill.
Yeah, and then she was abducted.
Yeah, no wonder.
And I'm like, you didn't think this was suspicious?
I don't remember where I
heard that from.
Non-family members should not be giving your child a gift.
No. And obviously, tell your child that if anybody is telling them to keep secrets, it doesn't matter who it is, that's wrong.
Yeah.
They should not have any secrets from their parents.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is something that probably happened in Cheryl's case.
Mm-hmm. He was probably like, you know, don't worry about it. Don't tell him.
And I think she wanted to get away.
Yeah, she had a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, and obviously. Here's a man offering her that for the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, what she thought.
Special for your 10th birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
And probably nobody made her feel special.
Yeah.
Before, because she's in a house, a big household.
Yeah. And with a stepmom that treated her bad.
Yeah.
Already.
And she probably wanted her real mom too, like,
yeah,
you know, or sure. her biological mom.
Yeah. But that is the really sad, heartbreaking case of Cheryl Spiegel that is unsolved still to this day.
Yeah, and Amber and I are so wrecked that, like, we can't even do a bullshit and banner segment.
Yeah.
I'm, like, really upset.
Yeah, this is a sad case.
It's really long and really upsetting. Yeah.
And brutal.
So we will keep you guys updated on Cheryl's case, obviously, if there's anything in the future, or really any case.
Oh yeah, any case that we cover.
Yeah, we still from time to time check in on our unsolved
cases.
People, yeah. I checked on Sabrina Long the other day and there's still nothing.
And if there's ever an update, we would do a little update segment or an update video or something.
Of course.
So.
Because we know you guys all over the world now are, like, invested.
Yes.
So, thank you guys so much. And if you're listening to this before August 1st, 2021, we have a giveaway right now on our Instagram. It's really easy to enter.
It's for a coffee cup and our Crime Cafe decal.
Right. Just to thank you guys for supporting us. And all you really have to do is, like and follow or something. Like, it's super easy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can follow us on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
At Crime Cafe Pod.
Yep. Email us, crimecafepod@yahoo.com. Email us anything, stories. Reach out to us for business inquiries. Reach out to us if you have, like, a comment to make, whatever. Yes. Like
case suggestions, anything like that.
A story.
Yes.
Ideas for the show.
Yes.
But we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.